I'm a little revved up this morning. Something about having babies up here on stage, and man, the way you guys were engaged in singing, it's well, I just like being with you. So glad you're here. Glad I'm here. So this week, a couple of weddings happened around our church family yesterday, and got me thinking a little bit about weddings. And then a friend told me this story, true story. His wife was at a wedding, and the bride bailed. Yeah, just didn't do it. So, what do you do then? Well, the reception is paid for, so party on. And then the groom came to the reception. Yeah, I hear that. Ooh, can you imagine the awkwardness of that moment? Like when you're sitting around the table, what do you say? Maybe you've been in a meal like that where there's an awkward silence around the table. Maybe it's a family gathering after something hard has happened. Or maybe it's a team lunch at work with somebody that you know you're going to have to lay off that week, right? What do you talk about? Silence. Awkward. Not knowing how to move forward. Today we're going to talk about how that same kind of awkward silence happens in our relationship with God sometimes. It can. Maybe you've experienced that. That sense that there's a gap, that there's a distance between you and God, and you're not sure how to move forward, how to go back, right? Maybe God hasn't shown up for you the way you wanted. Maybe he didn't answer prayer the way you'd hoped, and it's caused you to take a step back. Maybe you're just burdened and overwhelmed today, even here, just with that thought about, oh, that thing I keep doing, or that thing I've done that seems so big. What do you do when you experience distance in your relationship with God? How do you move forward? That's what we're going to talk about today, because we're going to become part of, in our text, an awkward, silent meal. It happens in John chapter 21, happens on a beach, and in this story, we're going to find out how the distance can get close. So if you have a Bible, turn to John chapter 21 with me, or you can also follow along on the screen. If you were here last week, you happened to hear Bill talk about, set up this scene, right? It happens this way. After the death of Jesus that threw his followers kind of for a loop, in the aftermath of that, Peter, one of the disciples, says, "Oh, I'm going fishing." And the other disciples are like, "Yeah, we're going too." And so they all get in a boat and they go out fishing. And they fish all night, and they don't catch anything. And in the morning, suddenly there's this person standing on the shore, and he's yelling at them, "Hey, why don't you try fishing on the other side?" And it's Jesus, but they can't recognize him, but they do it. They throw the net out on the other side, and they catch so many fish that the author of this book writes down the exact number, 153 big fish. Can you imagine that? And so that brings us to our scene in John chapter 21, because all of that ends with Jesus inviting them all to come and have breakfast with him. Okay, so this is John 21, and we're going to start in verse 12. After all this, Jesus said, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. So Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. Do you notice the silence, the kind of awkwardness at that meal? It's captured in that phrase, that little phrase. None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" Well, because, I mean, it's you, right, Lord? Like, we don't want to ask, but is that you? And so there's this awkwardness. Apparently nothing else, at least nothing else of significance, gets said in this conversation. Nothing else is recorded. They just sit and have breakfast. Well, this is really Peter's story. And Peter, of all of them, We notice his silence. Nothing is said between him and Jesus. You know, it was Peter's idea. Let's go fishing. Peter's the one when they say, hey, that must be Jesus, after they catch all the fish. He jumps and swims to shore, right? When they bring the boat close, it's Peter who goes out and hauls the net in. But through all of that, there are no words. Nothing spoken between Peter and Jesus. And that's understandable, because there's this thing between Peter and Jesus. There's this distance that because of something that Peter has done, and it's really big, and it's causing this silence, this gap, because of what he's done. It was at their last meal all together, maybe a couple of weeks earlier, before Jesus is arrested and crucified. Peter speaks up in front of all these same people who are gathered at the beach, and he says this, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I'll lay down my life for you. Will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly, I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And this happens right in front of them. And so, of course, that's exactly what happened, right? Jesus gets arrested, and he's hauled off. And this commotion occurs. It's a very public thing. People are gathering to see what's going to happen to Jesus. And they approach Peter, and they say, hey, aren't you with Jesus? And he's like, no. And then somebody else is like, hey, wait, no, I'm pretty sure we saw you with Jesus. He's like, no way. And the third person's like, no, we saw you. And by this time, Peter's like, blankety blank, no, I'm not, no, huh? And then Luke tells us what happens in that moment. Just as he was speaking, this third disowning denial, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Oh my goodness. So he's done this amazingly hard thing. He's betrayed Jesus three significant times. And Jesus knows. He catches his eye. Peter knows that he knows. And so there's this gap. And this is Peter's big life thing. It's the thing he wonders if it's insurmountable. How do you get over that? And so there's distance. Maybe you've been there. Like I said, maybe you're there right now, this morning, where you sense this wall or this gap or this distance with God, because maybe he hasn't shown up the way you wanted him to and you've stepped back. Or maybe you're wrestling with this thing that you did or that you do, and you've got this awkward silence. What do you do? How do you close the gap? What do you do when there's awkward silence between you and God? Well, if we're not careful, we'll do what we oftentimes do, and that's say, I'm going to try really hard to close this gap. I'm going to show up a little more. I'm going to try a little harder. I'm going to sign up for a few more things and show God that I want to be close to him again. Or like some of us do, we just let it hang out there. We just let the distance remain. We just keep drifting away. But today what I want you to see is it's Jesus who takes the steps to close the gap. It's Jesus who breaks the silence with Peter. And that's true for you too. Jesus wants to address the distance that can exist in your relationship with him. So Jesus does this with Peter, and he does it by asking the most important question of all. Back to John chapter 21, verse 15. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? There's the question. Do you love me? Now, if it was me, I'd be thinking, what kind of question is that? There's this distance. There's this thing between us. And you want to talk about love, which is hard enough for some of us to talk about. It's why emojis were invented. This week, I actually got a text from my wife. We celebrated our 29th anniversary this week. And applause for her. So on that day, she sent me this text. And it says, this is not a joke, I love, 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 love you. What do you do? Thumbs up, heart, right? Emojis are awesome. They help us talk about the things that are hard to talk about. The thing about this question, this love question from Jesus to Peter, is it's going to be the only thing he asks him. The only question on his mind. Do you love me? Now think about for a moment how crazy this is. Okay? Imagine maybe a married couple where one partner's been unfaithful, been with another. And when it's discovered, and when there's a meeting, a confrontation, the only question asked is, do you love me? Or imagine a trusted business partner. You know, somebody you sacrificed, you invested, you went all in, you left stuff behind to build this company, and you've given everything to it, and then this partner made a deal on the outside, and you're out. And when you meet up, when there's a confrontation, your only question is, do you love me? Or a friend has spoken about you behind your back or betrayed your confidence in such a profound way that it's cost you another friendship. And when you meet to talk about it, the only question is, do you love me? How crazy is that? Well, he actually asks Peter a little bit more. Now, I want you to see that the most important question to Jesus, when there's a gap, when there's distance in your relationship, in fact, the only question that matters to Jesus is, do you love me? He asks Peter just a little more. He says, do you love me more than these? Now, that's awkward. Because what he means is, Peter, do you love me more than these guys sitting around having breakfast love me? And we hear that and we think, who would ask such a question? What bearing does that have? And yet, when we remember Peter's story, we know it has every bearing. It matters deeply. Because Jesus is the one who during their last dinner together, he's in front of these same people. He said this, Mark recorded it for us. Peter declared, even if all fall away, I will not. And I'm sure those other guys are like, Peter, we're sitting right here. You know, we can hear you. But of course, he had fallen away. He'd fallen hard, harder than they had. Jesus knew it, they knew it, and Peter knew it, right? And so now it's like Jesus is saying, Peter, are you still wanting to stand up and say, you love me more than all these guys? And how do you answer a question like that? Well, Peter's answer is pretty simple. Yes. Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Do you notice what's missing? The more than these. Right? Peter's figured it out. That's foolish. That doesn't apply. This is about him and Jesus. But his answer to the question is simple and it's powerful and it's yes. Yes. I do love you. And then notice what else he says. You know that I love you. And that's really important because right then in that moment, Peter's got nothing else to point to. Except the knowledge that Jesus has, the way Jesus has of knowing your heart, knowing what you believe, knowing you. Because Peter can't say, well, Jesus, just look at my track record. Of course I love you, right? All he has to rely on is the fact that Jesus knows. And so he leans on that and says, you know what's in my heart and that I love you. Think again about how backwards this really is, how upside down this is. It doesn't really make sense to us. We don't do it this way as humans. We do it oftentimes the opposite. Hey, you say that you love me, but where are the actions to prove it? Where's the proof, the evidence of your love? That's what we do, right? Can you imagine saying to that spouse who'd been betrayed, who comes back and says, hey, we're back together. He says he loves me. That's all that matters. And you're thinking, really? But God does things upside down from us. He can do things upside down from us because he's God. And Jesus can offer you this unconditional love and acceptance and relationship because it's not about you and how good you can be and what you can do. It's about what he has done for you. And this creates this opportunity for he and Peter to have this exchange. God does things upside down from us, and it's awesome, people. You can rely on the fact that Jesus knows. He knows your heart. He knows your love. He knows your faith. He really knows. And so in those moments, in those situations where your actions aren't really that convincing, you can count on the fact that Jesus knows, and it's enough. That part's important. It's enough. We know this because of the response that Jesus gives to Peter, right? Peter says, yes, you know that I love you. And all Jesus says is three little words, feed my lambs. Feed my lambs. That's it. Feed my lambs. Not really, are you sure? Not what about last Thursday? Just feed my lambs. That's Jesus saying, Peter, there's no gap. There's no distance. There's nothing between us. Because I've got a job for you. I've got a role for your future. The people that I love and have invested so much in, I'm giving them to you. You feed them. You love them. You're back. When there's distance between you and God, his only question is, do you love me? It's the one thing that he wants to know at the end of it all. It's all that matters to him. And you can rest. You can rely on the fact that he knows. If your answer is yes, he knows. He knows, despite your actions, despite your failures, despite your weaknesses, even your betrayals, he knows your heart. And he knows your love, and this is enough to close any gap that exists between you. Any distance that you've put between yourself and God, it closes over the love question. And you can rely on that. You can rest in this. Now, this is really big stuff. It's hard to get your head around this idea that the only question that matters to Jesus is, do you love me? And that your yes, he knows, and it's enough. It's enough. There's no other questions for him. That's big stuff. It's hard to understand. And one of the ways we know this is hard is because Jesus repeats this conversation with Peter two more times. Look at verse 16. And Jesus said, again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And he answered, yes, Lord. You know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. It's an intense conversation if you think about it. Students of the Bible, some have found meaning in the fact that Jesus changes the words that he uses slightly in response to Peter, but probably John is just mixing it up for style. He likes to do that whenever he has to say the same thing three times. He likes to use different words that don't affect the meaning. They just keep it interesting. Because the heart of this is really for Peter. It's not for Jesus. So he's got to walk through this three times. It even says on the third time, he's sad, he's grieved. Not because Jesus didn't believe him. They're not arguing. But because the gap Peter had created was so big, there had to be three times. There had to be three. And like I said, this is more for Peter than it is for Jesus. Remember, Peter had denied Jesus three times in front of the crowd. And now Jesus has him affirm his love three times in front of a crowd. And three times Jesus affirms this restoration, this closing of the gap. It's like he's showing Peter, this is your biggest struggle. This is the thing in your life that you think you can't overcome. This is what's creating distance in your relationship with me. But your love for me, your love and my acceptance of you, it's big enough. It's covered. And if Peter's anything like me, it would take more than once to grab a hold of this. With each repetition, Peter grabs it a little more deeply. Each time he hears the words, feed my sheep, he reckons with the fact that there's nothing between them. That the only thing Jesus wants to know is if he loves him. And that he does really know. That's all Peter has to hang on to is his convinced heart that Jesus knows his love. And maybe you need a moment like that with God. Maybe today. But you need to hear him say to you more than once, it's forgiven. I love you. I'm here. And know in your heart that it's big enough. His acceptance of you is enough. And it's important because this opens the door to Peter's future. That's what the feed my sheep, feed my lambs, that's what that's all about. That's Peter's future. That's Jesus saying, listen, I have a purpose for you. I have a role. This is the rest of your life, Peter. You take care of my flock. Because every encounter, significant encounter with the love and forgiveness of Jesus, it results in a next step, a way to move forward. God's got something for you. And that's what this is for Peter. For Peter, it's feed my sheep, Peter. There's no gap. You know it. Here's how you move forward. Feed my sheep. For a woman who was caught in sexual sin, and before her accusers is put before Jesus, and Jesus looks her in the eye and forgives her, the next thing he says is, go and sin no more. That's the way forward. That's your next step. That's the rest of your life, right? To an astonished group of disciples who absorbed the depth of Jesus' love for them when he washed their feet. The next step was, and love one another. That's the next step. The way I've loved you, you love others. Move forward. Right? To a group of believers who fully encountered and believed in his resurrection and they stood there while he ascended to heaven, he said, here's your next step. Go and make disciples. Go. This is your future. And that's why it's so important to close the gap. To recognize that Jesus is the one who does it. That the question is, do you love me? And the confidence you can have is that he knows. He knows the answer. And so today, let me just encourage you. Maybe the distance between you and God is keeping you from fulfilling your future, your next step, your calling, your growth, your healing. Today, you can settle that. You can settle the love question. You can rely on the fact that Jesus knows your love, and you can let him give you the next step. Move forward. So today, if there's distance between you and God, maybe like I said, he didn't show up the way you wanted, and so you've stepped back, or maybe you're overwhelmed with remorse or guilt. Maybe you're just weary of your constant weaknesses. Let me encourage you today to hear Jesus asking you the question, the love question. Do you love me? And if your answer is yes, absorb and take confidence and rest in the fact that he knows. And it's enough. It's enough. And so today in your heart, tell him that you love him. You know, we started the service singing, Jesus loves me. And we're going to finish the service by you having a chance to say, I love Jesus. Just in your hearts. Affirm that question. Know that he hears you. Today, if your answer is no, you know, your answer to the love question could be no. No, not yet. It's the first I've heard of it. Or maybe your answer is no, not anymore, because he hasn't shown up the way you'd hoped. But you're wondering about that. Let me give you the encouragement today to read this book. Again, John, we've come to the end. The first 20 and a half chapters are God telling you how much he loves you through Jesus, all to lead you to this last half of a chapter, which is your opportunity to accept that and tell him that you love him. There's hope and there's wisdom in the book, so read it today. Let's pray as we close. And in a moment in your heart, I want you to hear Jesus asking you that question. The one he asked Peter, do you love me? Not in an accusing voice, but in a longing voice. And in your heart, give him your response. And Lord, today we choose the way of faith to believe that these words are true, that your love for us is so vast we can't undo it, that your acceptance of us doesn't depend on our strength but on your grace. And we're encouraged to know that you know, despite all of the times in our life, it doesn't seem like we show it, you know. And through that, you can close the gap. Like we sung earlier, we're running into your arms today, grateful, hopeful, and loving. In Jesus' name, amen.